Welcome to the From the Vine podcast. I'm your host, Bob Heifel, a reporter and writer of the From the Vine wine column for The Record in Stockton, California. I'm certified level 3 with the Wine and Spirit Education Trust and a part-time tasting room associate at the Lodi Wine and Visitor Center. I hope you enjoy this podcast, which focuses on the Lodi American Viticultural Area. I welcome your comments and reviews on our Facebook group page at recordnet.com/FTV209. And you can follow us at FTV209 on Twitter and Instagram. And welcome to the From the Vine podcast. I'm your host, Bob Heifel, and it's my great pleasure to have with me Susanna Rodriguez-Vasquez, and she is the winemaker at Peltier Winery in Lodi. Susanna, great to be with you as always. So nice to see you. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming and have this conversation with me. I'm very pleased that you came to see me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for the time. And people who are listening to this, we are at the very end of July. And before we started recording, Susanna was talking about harvest, which is coming up. So there's never really a dull moment in the life of a winemaker. And we're close to harvesting Chardonnay, you said, maybe a couple weeks or so?
That's right. So we do some sparkling wine, and we pick the Chardonnay lower bricks. Yeah. So it's getting pretty close. So it's going to be pretty soon. We'll start harvest pretty soon.
And are we a little bit ahead of schedule, behind schedule, or just kind of on schedule this growing season when it comes to the harvest?
You know, it's so funny because years ago we will be right on the schedule, but then lately harvest is being a little bit early, and now it's kind of in the normal, but compared to the previous years, will be a little bit late. Mm-hmm. So we're still going to see, but we're seeing that the bricks are moving a little bit faster now. So, yeah.
I find your story so fascinating because we don't meet a lot of winemakers anywhere that are from Bolivia, which is your home country. So how does a Bolivian girl wind up making wine in Lodi, California?
I know. So, you know, I think it was just a wonderful path for me to end up here. I started as an exchange student in California, and then I started an internship with Gallo. I worked for them for 5 years, and they helped me to attend some classes to UC Davis and learn more about winemaking, because my bachelor degree is agriculture, but they tried to use a liaison between winemaking and the grape site. So what it was fascinating to me. At the beginning, I was very scared because I had no idea about winemaking, and it was a complete new science. And I ended up just falling in love with it. Mm-hmm. It was just wonderful, and I decided to pursue that side. And after working for them, I learned the culture of the work. I learned a lot about school and, you know, the science, working with great winemakers. And then I changed jobs to Constellation and worked for Constellation for another 5 years, where I work with great people as well, and they gave me great opportunities, like doing winemaking overseas. So it was wonderful too, working for Constellation. And then the family, the Schott family, approached me to come and join their family here at mm-hmm. Peltier. And to me, it was wonderful. I never work in this scale. I never work mainly for quality and make sure that what we put in on the bottle representing the area. It was 100% Lodi, all the state fruit, family grown, you know, generations of growing the fruit in the same area, that the love for the land, the love for the culture. So to me, being part of that circle and being making wine out of these vineyards was just wonderful. Yeah, I loved it.
You mentioned the Schatz family. We should say Gayla and Rodney
yes.
Schatz and their longtime growers who had a label folks around here might remember called Peltier Station. And then a few years ago kind of went through a rebranding, or definitely went through a rebranding, and now it's Peltier Winery. But there are train tracks that run parallel to the property here at Kennefic and Peltier Road. So I was going to ask you about that because Rodney does such a wonderful job. He's so respected as a grower. And you said everything here at Peltier Winery is estate grown. It's all vineyards that Rodney either owns or controls.
Yep.
Compared to working for Constellation and interning at Gallo, what advantages are there to working for a family-owned operation and you're in control of the process from vineyard to bottle?
So to me, when we are working into a bigger environment where you are receiving a lot more thousands of tons, you are just making sure that the quality is there and you're finishing fermentation and everything is ready for when you need to bottle. But working for this smaller scale, you have a better connection with the vineyards. I will go to the vineyard, taste the fruit, make sure it's ready, you know, let them know that the fruit is ready to pick, and then we'll bring it to the winery. At that point, I'm already familiar with the fruit, the acidity, what aromas I want to perceive, or conserve, I should say. And then what I do is pretty much bring it, put the yeast that I like for that vineyard. I will inoculate all the tanks and then ferment it. And that is the wine that we taste. I do not manipulate that much the fruit because I respect, all the flavors and aromatics from that vineyard. Ronnie is an excellent grower. And so I just want to show that in a glass. A lot of our wines will be 90 to 95% varietal, just to show the vineyards. And to me, it was just a way to show Lodi. We are proud of being Lodi. And how are we farming? We are part of the sustainability program, Lodi Sustainable. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we want to put in a glass, and people come to Lodi and enjoy it, same as all the other wineries in this area, that they're doing a great job.
So do you feel kind of your stamp or your identity with the wines here at Peltier is really kind of to let the vineyard do the talking, so to speak? Is your winemaking style kind of on the, I don't know if minimalist approach is the right way to put it, but just kind of letting the fruit do the talking?
Yes, absolutely. I will, in the whites, it will be absolutely that way. It will be naked. It will ferment it, and I'll blend it, or it will 100% if I think everything is in there. So we done it before with Vermentino, that's been 100% Vermentino, or Sauvignon Blanc as well. That was 100% Sauvignon Blanc. Of course, in the reds, we use barrels for the reds, but we will make sure that the fruit is what is showing in the barrel. We'd add complements that will, bring up the fruit, and mm-hmm. it will help us with the mouthfeel, but it's not going to take over right. the nature of the varietal.
Right. Mm-hmm. I talked with a winemaker who said that they do barrel selection based on the wine that they get in, the fruit, how it tastes, as opposed to buying barrels and then putting wine into the barrels. Do you kind of have an approach when it comes to the barrels you select?
Yeah, so in 2016, it was the first year that I started working here, and Rodney showed me this vineyard, this Cabernet Sauvignon, mm-hmm. that is located in Clemens. This is a beautiful vineyard. It produces between 4 to 5 tons per acre max. Uh-huh. And he told me, this vineyard is going to produce really good fruit. Let's, make an excellent wine out of this. And When we went and we tasted the fruit and we saw the small berries, the color, the texture, the flavors, it was like, it was wonderful. And I said, absolutely. So what we did is we buy 10 different barrels with different toasts from all these different companies. So we match the barrel to the vineyard. We'll bring all the best characteristics of it. That was 2016. We tasted every 3 months to make sure that we were like being constant, and everything was blind taste. Mm-hmm. And then we will end up picking the same barrels at the end. So that was where we were at. Uh-huh. And now in 2017, we did a smaller trial, picking all these barrels that we really liked. And then we really find our favorite barrels. Uh-huh. And those are the ones in 2018 were purchased only. So that's the way that we did it for that.
So in barrel right now, do you have reds from 16 and 17 and 18 kind of doing their thing in barrel right now?
Yes. So most of the 2016 is being bottled.
Okay.
So these barrels, when the premium, the ultra premium went into the reserve cap, those were selected by barrel, not by group.
Okay.
So we went and tasted, and they were selected by barrel. We blend them, we retaste them again, we make sure that that's what we want to do, and those barrels got selected. Then the second tier went into Triumph. Mm-hmm. That is our red blend.
Right. Great
and
one.
Yeah, we love that.
It's awesome.
And then the third tier goes into Black Diamond Cabernet Sauvignon. Uh-huh. So right now I'm almost... I have maybe 5 barrels 2016. It's just another research that we were doing, so we're keeping that way. And then the 17, it's all of them is there. I didn't bottle any 17 yet. Uh-huh. It's going to be coming soon. And then I have the 2018 that it just went. They have to wait a couple of years still. Yeah.
I want to talk about some of your wines.
All right.
I've tried most of them. I love all the ones I've tried.
Thank you.
Let's talk about Triumph. Can we talk about kind of what goes into that? Does it? I would imagine the blend and the percentages, the blend of varieties and the percentages changes from vintage to vintage, but it's always just a really consistent, full-bodied, beautiful red wine.
Yes, I love that blend. That is probably one of my favorite wines to blend. That is Teroldego, mm-hmm. Cabernet Sauvignon, and Petit Sirah.
Nice.
So it does change. In 2015, when I blended, it was almost one third of each, but there's always a predominant one because of the aromatics and the mouthfeel for the personality of that red blend, and it was Teroldego. In 2016, it was more Cabernet Sauvignon. So we're just trying to... We taste them side by side, and we're just trying to keep with the mouthfeel and the texture mm-hmm. and the right amount of oak. So that blend, the barrels, we use a few new ones, and the rest will be second use barrels because uh-huh. I want to still keep the fruitness on it, on that blend.
Right.
The 2016, when we did a sensory panel, and we did it between our team and between customers as well, but it was actually pretty interesting to do. They end up saying that they were very similar, what is great. Mm-hmm. Consistency is very important. But at the same time, the feedback was the 2016 had more of the dark cherry aromatics. Mm-hmm. And that was the target, right? We uh-huh. always want to improve a little, make it better. Not bolder, uh-huh. but better, smoother, more fruit. And so now that is teaching us for 2017, what is the track that we want to do? And again, it's all in the blending and the varietals. Every vintage is different. Uh-huh. So it's starting kind of like learning from the previous year, but you're starting from zero again.
Right.
Yeah.
Blending is such an art, isn't it? I mean, do you enjoy that aspect of winemaking?
I do. I think that's my favorite part. Fermentation is one of the things that I love because it's all the detail that it goes in there, especially, I mean, whites are very... time-consuming in the front when you do, but the one time you put them to sleep, they'll stay good. If you did a good job, then you don't have to worry. But reds are easier in the fermentation cycle, but then is the, you know, what do you do after? Is the oaking, is the, you know, all the other processes when it becomes a little bit more complicated. But blending, after you done all that job and you feel like you did a good job, so the you're in such a close contact with all these tanks and with all this wine, mm-hmm. that you already know in your mind what tank will go really well with what. So, you know, it's like being in, it's like being a little bit of a cook, I guess you can say.
Right,
and you know all your spices, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you already know the bases, and you just put them together and you can get this wine.
Right.
But it is a team effort, right? Uh-huh. So I will have a big idea. I'll put all these three options together and say, this is what I think that goes together. And then we'll taste it as a team.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then, you know, Rod, Gayla, Farron, you know, whoever wants to come and participate in the tasting comes and we all taste it together. And, you know, we discuss about what is the difference between these two glasses. And then we think which one will have show better. Yeah.
And you're blending for what you have right in front of you that day, that moment. But wine, as we all know, is a living, breathing thing, and in the bottle it can change from day to day, week to week,
absolutely.
Month to month, year to year. So do you kind of have to project a little bit when you're blending to what it might be like a year, 2 years, 3 years down the road, or do you just kind of go based on what you're tasting at that moment?
You know, I think when we are blending, you know, as a winemakers, we're thinking as a future too.
Uh-huh.
So you're thinking how the tannins are gonna, you know, evolve, how they're gonna change a little bit. But at the same time, now what is going on, I think, a little bit in the wine market is people, when they buy the bottle, a lot of them will drink it between 1 week or two in a month.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, yes.
And before they will wait, you know, maybe a year or something.
Right.
So you have to make sure that when you're blending, that person can enjoy it in a month.
Mm-hmm.
But if you let it age for a while, for a year, you know, it still show up what you're bringing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's kind of like you have to account for that possibility. They'll drink it in 2 weeks.
I read somewhere, this was a while back, that most consumers will drink a bottle of wine within 72 hours of the time they purchase it. So I don't know if most wine consumers are really stocking their cellar and putting stuff away for, you know, for years on end. There are those that do that, but I think in general Lodi's style, I don't know if you would agree with me, but I think in general, the big brush here painting this picture, but I think most of the wines, yes, they do, especially the reds, and some of the whites do have staying power, but for the most part, they're kind of meant to be drunk fresh. I think they have that fresh fruit forward style that can really really show itself beautifully, you know, the second you buy that bottle.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. We know that the first impression is very important, and we want to make sure if you open the bottle in 72 hours, or you open the bottle in a year, the first impression is like something that you will remember.
Yeah.
Something to say, this is absolutely great. I love it. What is this bottle? Oh, it's Peltier.
Yeah. Right, yeah. The Teraldigo is a variety that I think Rodney's really kind of championing.
Absolutely.
Championing here in Lodi. We're seeing more of it come up. I think growers like it because there seems to be a demand for it as a blender.
Yeah.
But Peltier has done a single variety Teraldigo with great success in recent years. What is it like working with that grape? And for people that may not be familiar with Teraldigo, what can they kind of expect when they try it?
So Teraldigo is a varietal from Italy, northern Italy. And but I tasted when I was in Italy and I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
But it does not taste anything like it tastes in California.
Really?
So California, it grows bigger and bolder. Mm. It's darker in color, bigger tannins. So Toraldego is a varietal that if you like tannins, you love this varietal.
Oh, okay.
It has a lot of tannins.
Uh-huh.
A couple months ago, at the beginning of the year, actually, we released the 2011 mm-hmm. Toraldego that it was aged in barrels for 36 months. And after that, it did some bottle aging. So, and now we're just releasing because now it's ready
wow.
to be released.
So 8 years after the vintage.
So it's an investment,
yeah.
really,
yeah.
right?
yeah, that's a lot of idle time.
So
yeah.
then, and if you take it home, it has some ageability at home as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a varietal that has a lot of tannins on it. So when we're fermenting, we're conscious on it. So we mm-hmm. make sure that we make some winemaking practices where we will make sure that we are not over extracting those tannins, mm-hmm. like you want to do it in other varietals maybe. So it is the aromatics that comes with the combination of the varietal and the barrels that goes in brand new French barrels mm-hmm. are incredible.
Yeah, for me.
I love that wine, and we make sure that, you know, if you see the 2011 you pour in a glass, you see the color, it doesn't have a brown hue on it. It's uh-huh. just vibrant dark red.
Uh-huh.
And it's just the wine that it is. And people come to us a lot just to taste that
yeah.
wine. And
yeah.
it's exciting for us because
yeah.
we're very proud of it.
Yeah.
Takes a lot of time and a lot of patience.
Yes. right.
to produce that wine. But it's been... for us, is being a success.
Yeah, that's a great wine. Really
mm-hmm.
is. Maybe we could shift to whites. Do you have favorite whites that you make for Peltier?
I do. I do love making Sauvignon Blanc. I love Sauvignon Blanc. It takes me probably, if I come to the winery and I will receive the fruit at 5 a.m., we are leaving home like... we'll stay like maybe between 12 to 16 hours that day when
uh-huh.
we do Sauv Blanc. Because all the, you know, everything that we do to just to kind of get that greenness on the Sauvignon Blanc. I love the Californian style of Sauvignon Blanc, but for me, for the style that I want to ferment, I want to drink, is a little bit more green,
uh-huh.
less tropical on
uh-huh.
it.
Right.
And of course, dry.
Uh-huh. So maybe some of the, I don't know, maybe are you talking about fresh cut grass, lemongrass, those kinds
yes.
of flavors, the bell pepper a little bit?
You know, I don't think it's quite bell pepper yet. That will be more a New Zealand style
yeah,
that we can
right.
we can imitate. You know, we're different terroir.
Right.
But it's more like, yeah, it's more like a little bit, you know, grassy, a little bit more grapefruit,
uh-huh.
like green apple crisp.
Mm-hmm.
And, because that, for me, is like more refreshing when I'm drinking a white. So the alcohols on these wines are going to be between 11.5 to 12%
nice.
Max.
That's nice, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
So I want everybody to be able to enjoy it and get all these fresh aromatics and finish the bottle.
Mm-hmm. and come back for more.
Exactly.
And drink it within 72 hours. That's the goal. We're with Susana Rodriguez-Vasquez, who is the winemaker at Peltier Winery. Is this coming up on your fifth harvest?
This is going to be my fourth.
Your fourth harvest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And with each harvest, I'm sure you learn more and more. Every year is different. How is the 19 harvest kind of shaping up? And then I would like to talk to you about one particular wine that you make that I love, but we'll save that for a second. How about the how's the 19 harvest kind of or vintage kind of shaping up? What do you think we might see? Is it kind of hard to tell right now?
It's a little bit early for me
yeah.
to say exactly what it is. It looks like it's coming with a good amount of fruit.
Okay.
It's coming soon. I need to get on those vineyards and start checking. You know, at this point, I was like, when I went 2 weeks ago, it looked so a little bit far behind. I was like, okay, I'm not going to worry about color yet. But now realizing like, okay, maybe this week I need to start visiting and start checking on colors mm-hmm. and see the setting. And we went and checked the vineyard in Clemens, the Cabernet. Beautiful as always. And it's showing... you know, a good amount of fruit. Toraldego is showing, you know, it has some fruit. Chardonnay, But so far, it's looking really good. It's clean. We didn't see no issues. You know, it's been a little bit of a cold summer till like a week and a half ago, more or less.
Yeah,
so now it's changing.
But yeah, it's been a pretty mild growing season. And we had that in 18 too, 2018, by all reports, was a pretty quote unquote normal growing season without any, you know, ill-timed rain or frost or hail, and a fairly nice mild summer. So it seems like it's kind of that way this year a little bit too.
Yeah, and then, you know, the only changes that they come is like them when you have those weeks that they will get super hot.
Yeah,
and then all the plants will shut down.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit hard to predict, but so far it's looking that.
Yeah, cross our fingers.
Yeah, that it's going to be just a good harvest, and you know, it's exciting.
Yeah.
We're excited. We want to make the new wines and see what it's going to bring, and you know, harvest is coming.
Yeah, right. Yep. The white wine I wanted to bring up,
yes,
if you don't mind, is the Vermentino, because I love it, and it's such a great crisp white variety. Love that wine, and I love Peltier's in particular. Can you tell us about the Peltier Vermentino a little bit?
Vermentino. So this is another of our Italian varietals. Mm-hmm. Vermentino is a lot of fun. I love the personality. If you like Sauvignon Blanc, you like Vermentino. Vermentino kind of has the same path. It's a little bit more into the crisp apple, but it has some a different kind of mouthfeel. It's a little bit bigger than Sauvignon Blanc. To me, it reminds me a little bit of like an almond, kind of like that bitterness at the end. It's very elegant, very citrusy for sure. And the same approach, we do the same approach. It's like we picked early enough so the alcohol will be same, 11%, 12% max. And so in that way, I don't have to add any acid to it. So what I bring to the winery is what I put in the glass.
Nice.
So it's last year, in 2017, yes, it was 100% Vermentino, and it was lovely. I was so happy with how it turned out that we just decided to leave 100%. 2018, to be able to keep with the 2017 same personality, we had to blend it a little bit, but like I said, everything is around 90 to 95% varietal in those wines. Yeah.
Do you know where the Vermentino grows and what?
Yes, it grows in Elk Grove.
In Elk Grove, okay.
Yes. Is the Sub ABA is McCallamy River.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm saying it right.
No, you got it. You're good. You're on it. Yeah.
So so it gets the change of temperature for the river. So we saw as much as 40 degrees difference between night and day.
Big diurnal range, which is, we have a great climate here for grape growing, don't we? This Mediterranean climate with these big diurnal ranges. What is the advantage of having that kind of temperature range that we have here?
To me, is the aromatics. It helps us with the aromatic and the fruit that change. You know, same like happens in another area that are closer to the coastal, right?
Yeah.
So Nomad has that kind of changes as well, that they can get all the way to 100, but at nighttime they will go down maybe a little bit, maybe 50 degrees, but we get 40 degrees and we get that breeze that comes through, you know, from the Delta. So that helps us with all the aromatics and colors. We have some Pinot Noir there. And also something about this vineyard is on the wrong rootstocks.
Okay.
So the production will be smaller than it will be, you know, in a different way. So when we go and taste it, you just make sure the aromatics that you're looking for are there. Because it also has a little bit of that lychee, you know what I mean? That fruit.
And it's that fruit, that kind of delicious tropical fruit.
Yes. Yeah. And then to me, like when I drink Vermentino and I eat some like sushi or eat some like, you know, that salty, it combines so well. I love that. And we're doing very good with that brand. Thank you with that varietal.
So you have a wine family. You're in winemaking. So is your husband, right?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, yes.
So your kids don't have a chance, do they? They are brainwashed.
Yeah, I know. It was so funny one day because I went to school and the teacher said, it was kind of funny today when Fabiola is my daughter, mm-hmm. and she's 11, and I have my son Lucas and he's 6. Mm-hmm. And the teacher was saying, your daughter was saying, my mom has so much wine in the house, so much wine everywhere. There is wine everywhere. That is not true. But I was like so worried. I was like, no. I have like a small rack of wine, but it's not that much. But for her, it's so much, right? Uh-huh, probably in other houses is not.
Uh-huh. Yeah. She's calling Child Protective Services on you.
I know. I'm like, no. It's not that much. Trust me. It's not that much wine. But my husband, David, he works for Gallo. And he does grow relations in this area. So okay. He buys the fruit and, yeah, so we both are involved in the same industry, what is wonderful for us, mm-hmm. because we understand how it works. We work with sometimes with the same people. Right. And so we understand how much, you know, the time that we have to invest and just having a great harvest. And we both try to do the same. And we're very... we help each other a lot.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because we have young kids, but it's great. We have family that help us, that support us, and
right. So we mentioned that you're from Bolivia originally, mm-hmm. and you obviously you're female. You know, we're seeing, but I think we're seeing a lot more women in winemaking. Mm-hmm. You know, Napa, Lodi, in this area. Do you think we're beyond the female winemaker label and just winemaker, or are there still strides to be made when it comes to women in the winemaking field? This is a question I would never bring up to a man, so I feel almost kind of like this is an inappropriate question or a sexist question.
Not at all. Right. I don't take that at all. And then actually, you know, I appreciate that you bring something like that because it's new generations of female winemakers that are coming, uh-huh. and they're like trying to make sure that this is the right industry for them. And I will say that it's absolutely the right industry. I think that changed. I think now how we are seeing this position as winemakers is more about talent.
Yeah.
Right? Than the gender. I think at this point, we female winemakers, we prove that we are up to the game. And mm-hmm. so I don't think people is questioning anymore. I think that people start change the mentality. I never felt in Lodi that somebody was looking at me different because I was a female winemaker. Of course, I was new. I was working in the same industry, but when you are working for a corporation, it's very close. So, you know, you're never really involved with all the events that happen in Lodi. So I never felt like that. I think it's a great industry, and I will advise any female that is trying to get to, you know, run a facility and be the winemaker to go jump and do it. It's awesome. It's an awesome job.
Yeah. Well, you do an awesome job.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us out of your busy schedule to carve some time for us. We really appreciate it. And I know everyone who's listening to this appreciates it too. Susanna, thank you.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm glad. And we can't leave without encouraging everyone to come visit Peltier Winery and taste these great wines grown by Gayla and Rodney Schatz and made by Susanna Vasquez. And Peltier Winery is located on Peltier Road, east of Highway 99 at Kennefic Road. And the tasting room, is it open daily?
It is open daily.
Yeah, so every day, come on by. Yeah,
great staff here. Please stop by.
Stop by. You have sparkling, you have rosé, you have white and red. You have everything, and they're all just absolutely delicious. So thanks again, Susanna. And thank you to you for listening to the From the Vine podcast.
Absolutely.